Alright, what is Puppet? Puppet is basically three things. It's a language for describing how you want machines built, it's a client server for distributing that configuration, and it's a library for realizing that configuration, so it'll work across lots of different distributions. Who is the client? The client is a national hire company. They are the largest Australian desktop Linux deployment. Right, and what is Merlin? Merlin is the particular desktop Linux project. It's basically a combination of new hardware, Linux infrastructure, and a Java point-of-sales application built on top. Basically, what that means for us is it's Linux in every branch. Right, so in the beginning, 2004, this project has been going on for quite some time. We used a combination of Fedora Core 3 and kickstarting, and we had this concept of a config package. So basically, the kickstart would set up the system very, very basically, install a whole bunch of packages afterwards, and then it would apply these config packages. Now, what these config packages do is they basically contain the configuration for all the different things that are installed on the system. Most of you, if you've done this before, will realize what an absolutely horrible hack this is. Three problems with this. Firstly, you have a one-to-one mapping of these config packages to an actual system. The problem with that is when you start having multiplying hardware, you end up with a problem like this. Next problem, you have a lot of shared config in those config packages. You actually find that one config package actually has configuration that can be shared across lots of different machines. So what you can do is you can try and split that configuration out into lots of smaller packages. The problem then is you just times your workload by three, because all the processes and procedures for managing just one package, you're now going to have to start doing that for all the other sub-packages that you've created. The third problem is the IBM lucky dip. IBM suck balls, and they absolutely suck when it comes to providing reliable hardware. We found that when we originally started in 2004, we had IBM X306s. Within about 6 months of using those, they discontinued them. We had to switch to IBM X306Ms. After about 12 months of that, we had to switch to IBM X3250s. The thing that we found with that is Fedora Core 3 isn't going to work on your newer hardware. So we had to upgrade to Fedora Core 6 for it to work correctly. So what that basically meant is we needed a whole bunch of quick fixes to get things up and running and working in the same way, but on the new upgraded distribution. So what we did was we modified the kickstarts. We cloned the Fedora Core 3 kickstarts, hacked them up for Fedora Core 6 specific stuff, and then we monkey patched all the, you know, all the changes to all the different bits of software. The problem with that is that it blew up in our face. It is not reproducible, and it was eventually abandoned. We spent 6 months on this. We couldn't get it anywhere. We just thought, fuck it, you know, let's start fresh. So we started with a clean slate. Basically, what that meant was we needed to come up with a new build and prep process. So basically throw out everything that we've done before and let's focus on being really, really minimal, installing a base set of packages, and then upgrade the entire SOE and puppetize everything. So basically the kickstart is very, very simple. All it does is it boots up the machine, sets a bunch of defaults, and then in the post-install section, it will install Puppet. Puppet will do a very, very simple run, and then the machine will reboot. Right, and the final thing is we need to version control everything. One of the really big problems with the previous installation was that there wasn't a lot of version management between different changes that we'd make. You know, we'd upgrade a package, we'd make some change, we'd upgrade a package, and we'd bump the version number. But that's very, very difficult to manage when you have a 10-step process for building packages. Right, so the way that we did it was we had a 2-week sprint. We basically did this in an isolated environment, away from Canon's, away from the client site, and in a complete vacuum, basically. This is a great way because we were able to teach people who would be using the system in the end, one-to-one, you know, very, very personable and, you know, hands-on about the way things would actually be built. And in fact, we got them to build the majority of the system themselves, in such a way that we were basically navigating and they were driving. It was up to them to type stuff into the keyboard to go off and do research and work out how we're going to solve this particular problem. Right, and the final thing that we did was we had to set goals and have to be incredibly strict about it. And basically what that came down to was what is the bare minimum needed to make this work? What we needed to do was we needed to make a copy of the Fedora Core 3 environment with all the new good stuff in it, basically, you know, replicate the existing functionality but on a newer version. we had to be very, very careful because when you're in this sort of environment, you're playing out with new toys and all that sort of thing, you get really enthusiastic, like, yeah, I'm going to go implement this and solve this problem and fix that. We didn't have the time. We only had 2 weeks to do it. Right, so we started very, very simply. We needed to reset up the PXE boot environment, rewrite the kickstart files, and set up Apache for serving out the RPMs. Because we're using Fedora, it's all Yum-based, so we've got that down pat really nicely. We're able to use all the existing infrastructure and just basically pop our new packages in there. Right. The next thing that we moved to was iterative development. And basically, what that meant was we needed to start very, very simple and build from there. So we'd set up the Yum repositories, make sure that they're pointing in the right place, set up the classes and define so that that we're able to customize the repository locations for different sites. Because Canards. Canards have about 100 different sites that they have this particular desktop Linux deployment at, and that's actually growing at a rate of about 10 new ones per year. So that's quite a lot of sites. And for each of those different sites, the package repositories generally just point to themselves. But as soon as you start having other machines, you want to make sure that they're all pointing to the right location as well. So instead of having to get packages off some far, far away machine in some data center in some random corner, you want to be able to just point it to your local branch server and get all the packages off that. Right, so after we set up the Yum repositories, we set up the system tools. So just all the basic bread and butter things that you would expect to have on a system. SSH client, screen, SAR, all the normal tools that you use day to day that aren't installed as part of a very, very minimal desktop install. Because part of the kickstart process is that we'll only install about, I think it's about 80, maybe 100 packages all up on the system. So it's absolute bare bones. The next thing we did from there was we started focusing on the individual software components. So we started on Apache, Samba, CUPS, LDAP, and then we moved to Bind, DHCP, Jabber, DB2, PAM, SSH, TFTP, XORG, and GNOME. When you actually look at it through Puppet, and when you're puppetizing it, you realize what an absolutely massive environment is. When you're not using a configuration management system, you just generally don't realize the scale of what your environment actually entails. You centralize it all in one place like this, and you can see it very clearly. You realize, holy shit, this is actually a big fucking deal. Right. Then the next thing we moved to was OO for system administrators. So basically what we do is now that we have all these small software components, so we've created a class for Apache, we've created a class for a TFTP server, we've created a class for DB2. Then what we do is we group those classes into what we call roles. Now, roles aren't anything particularly special. They're basically just encapsulation. But because of that, we can abstract away a lot of the internals of a way a particular role or the way that a particular role works. So for instance, if you want to set up a NetBoot server, that's basically installing TFTP, Apache, DHCP, and DNS. For the Merlin application, we make sure that we have Java and DB2 installed. And then a branch server is a combination of all these roles, so that when they need to add a new machine to the system, all they have to do is branch server and then pass it a list of configuration, basically. Right, the next thing we did is we test like there's no tomorrow. And we actually did this throughout the entire process. Basically what would happen is we'd create a new manifest for a particular software component or a role. And then we had four machines that we were doing testing on. So two of them we would reprep from scratch and check that it's working okay. So if you prep the machine from scratch, check that it all works. And the other thing that we would do is on the other two machines, we would run Puppet and just make sure that the configuration was applied correctly. So what were the results of this? We had the basic system knocked out in 2 weeks. We got the bugs sorted out in about another week all up. It was an absolutely flawless deployment. No problems whatsoever, except for one. We didn't install Java, which to me isn't that much of a problem because their application is a piece of shit and I don't want it to touch my beautiful system. We also found that there were a whole bunch of happy side effects out of this. So, rapid development, or more appropriately, extremely rapid development. These are things that we found in the month or so after we did the deployment. We massively reduced the development time. Through reducing, reusing, and recycling code. For example, the original original project, the 2-week sprint, was just covering servers, the branch servers. But then we quickly found that, you know, wow, this is an absolutely fantastic setup. It's working really, really well for us. Let's extend that to the desktop machines that we've had there. And I actually sat down and I thought, okay, this is probably going to take about, you know, 2 or 3 days to get up and running, and you know, let's, you know, because we've got to puppetize the entire setup. I actually had it knocked out in the morning. It took me about 3 hours. So that's really a testament to the awesome power of Puppet. It also helped quite a bit when we had code and infrastructure reuse. You know, we've got the whole thing of don't repeat yourself. And we also needed to be able to share improvements, you know, that you might do in one particular area on one particular project with other areas. For example, we had a machine called KenPHP on a separate project, which is basically a PHP server. And we needed to set that up very quickly. What we were able to do is go, okay, we have all this existing infrastructure in Puppet. I want that bit, that bit, that bit, that bit, and I want to choose, oh, okay, let's write some more stuff just to give us the extra functionality. And that was done. We actually had the PHP server set up, which another company tried to set up and couldn't do it in 3 weeks, and we did it in an afternoon. The other cool thing was the hardware auditing. I was talking before about the one-to-one mapping of config packages to hardware. Now, it wasn't such a big problem until we realized that, you know, different machines have got slightly different X configuration, different graphics cards, and hence different X configurations. The interesting thing was that we decided, okay, let's do this proper. Let's write a whole bunch of factor facts. Factor is a library that the Puppet sort of executes to collect facts about the system before it does a Puppet run. And we said, okay, let's detect all the hardware on this and let's see what we had. We ended up finding out that we actually had 14 different types of hardware deployed in the field. This is for a project that was originally only going to have 3 different types of hardware. So it was absolutely fantastic for us because we actually found out that, you know, this is actually quite a complex environment, and there is actually a lot of different variants in here that we're going to have to take into account. Finally, the safety net. That all comes down to using a version control system for managing your manifests. There's no real example that I can give you off bat, but one of the nice things about it is that you get this general feel of comfort when you are using the system. Before, when we were using the old system, there would always be this sort of, you know, this alarm ringing in the back of your head going, you know, something's about to break, something's about to break, something's about to break. But with this, you didn't have that. I wasn't constantly in anxiety. They weren't constantly in anxiety. It was also fantastic because we were able to have multiple people contributing on the same code and then shared improvements, all that sort of thing. So to me, it's very much a safety net, and it makes working a lot more enjoyable. Right, very quickly, some quirks and challenges with the system. Okay, firstly, the prep order. One of the interesting things that we found was that, okay, we need to set up, when we prep the machine, we need to give it a unique host name so the Puppet can identify it when it runs. But when we were originally doing it, we were like, oh, okay, so just put in the host name, get Puppet to pick up that host name, and then it'll run, and then it'll be, you know, and that's basically it. It'll generate the certificates, reboot the machine, you'll be sweet. The thing that we found, though, was that we needed to actually have the YUM repository set up because we couldn't reliably guarantee that when Puppet started up after you initially prepped the machine, that YUM was going to be the first thing that runs. In fact, I think it only happened maybe once out of 100 different runs when we were testing it. So what we did was we applied the YUM tag to the YUM configuration, and when we did the Puppet run in the prep to generate the certificates, we'd also make sure that we run the YUM configuration, any other, you know, miscellaneous Puppet configuration. And this was great because it meant that we could guarantee that when the machine rebooted, it would have the YUM repository set up and everything would be sweet. Yeah?
That YUM repository, you're talking about building the branch servers? Or?
Yeah, that's right. Now, so when I say the YUM repository, I mean setting up the configuration in etc. yum.repos.d and all the different repo files that are in there.
Yeah, talking about the branch server, building the branch server rather than building the desktop?
No, it actually applies to both as well. We need to make sure that you set up the YUM repositories. You point the machines to the right YUM repositories when you're booting the machine, when you're prepping the machine. Right. The next thing which consumed so much of our time was DB2 hell. Who here has used DB2 in a production environment before? I feel all of your pain. It's an absolute piece of crap. I cannot stand it. In fact, that 2-week sprint that we did, about a week of it was actually fixing different bugs that we found in the DB2 installation process. We found that it would spray shit all over the file system. You couldn't reliably install it and then uninstall it and then reinstall it again because it would leave cruft lying around. When you uninstalled it, it wouldn't stop any of the daemons. It wouldn't clean up after itself. It was just an absolute nightmare. We managed to sort it out. I'm actually going to publish the DB2 manifest that we have up. So anybody else here is going to use Puppet in the future with DB2, you can be, you know, slightly relieved. The second interesting thing that we came up, which was a bit of a quirk, was printing in Java. Now, the application itself, you know, you'll do point of salesy stuff in it, and then you'll go and print. And then once you print, you know, it'll send stuff to Cups. Cups will send it out in the printer. You know, you have a document. The interesting thing that we found out between the unpuppetized Fedora Core 6 and the puppetized Fedora Core 6 is that the page margins were slightly offset. In fact, the page would shift about 3 centimeters down the page, which is a bit of a problem because at the bottom of the page was a legal disclaimer. So we couldn't actually work out what the problem was. We actually spent about 3 days trying to work out, okay, you know, there's practically no difference between these two different machines. They've got almost the same packages installed, you know, a few less. But there's nothing really all that odd here. What we ended up doing is just creating a very, very simple wrapper script around LPR, and we manually reset it. It's only a hack for the time being, but it's an interesting quirk. Finally, version control system discipline. The one thing that I didn't really think about all that much was that, you know, support are not programmers. Most programmers, when they come out of uni, they don't really have that much of an idea about the discipline of software engineering. And you actually have to take a lot of that discipline and apply it to system administration when you're using it here, even more so than when you do programming. So actually getting them into the mindset of, oh, okay, I need to make a change to the system. Okay, go to this particular directory, make some changes, make sure I do a commit, make sure that I push the changes, all that sort of thing. They're not used to doing that. They're used to logging into the machine, making the change, and then being done with it. And it took a bit of time to get them in the mindset of, oh, okay, there's actually a structure and a procedure and a process that I need to go through. But once they grasped that, and they could see the benefits and advantages of, oh, I made this change and it fucked up and it blew up the entire system, revert. They absolutely love that, and they're completely sold on the idea. All right, questions? Yes.
What version control system are you using?
Right, so the question was, what is the version control system that we're using? We're using BZR. Yes?
Yeah, just in terms of the paper side of things, what sort of method do you have on the project, and what work did you do with the client in developing the site support procedures and so forth, and how do they react to the normal guys environment?
Right. Okay, so the question, well, there are a couple of questions there, but just very, very simply, how many people were involved in the project and how did they cope with using Linux? So there were two people working on the project other than myself. They're just support people. They're not really system administrators, so they've sort of grown into that role over the last few years. In terms of adapting from Windows to Linux, when these people came onto the project, they knew nothing about Linux whatsoever. So they had been trained from, you know, from basically nothing up to supporting this 400-seat deployment. They're actually coping with it really well. They're pretty smart guys. And I think that one of the things that I find about comparing Windows to Linux is that Windows, well, at least for Kennards, is that with Windows, they have the skills for it, but it doesn't have a lot of flexibility. But with Linux, they have a tremendous amount of flexibility, but not a lot of skills. And the trick is to build up their level of skills so they're able to cope and do all the normal things that they would expect to do with a Windows environment under Linux. It's taken a while to get them to that point, but I think that they're starting to get to a particular point where they are self-sufficient enough to cope with the environment. Yes?
That second part, when the machine is being built, how quick you got it all working, but in reality, how long did it take? Because you have to learn the products and stuff like that. I mean, how long do you really set aside for something?
Right, so the question was, how long would I really, really set aside for doing this in the real world? Well, I had a bit of experience with a previous Puppet deployment for another company that had a sort of similar situation. So I had a lot of existing familiarity with the system. I think that I had my learning fast-tracked because I was able to work with something that had already been built. I was able to understand, you know, all the quirks of it. ways that I would do things better in the future. I think that in reality, to get yourself comfortable enough with the system to be able to get to a point where you're able to do something like this in 2 weeks, it'll probably take maybe 3 to 6 months of intensive day-to-day use of the system. Yes?
Did you retrofit all the pumps to
Right, so the question was, did we retrofit Puppet onto any of the existing Fedora Core 3 machines? We did it very, very basically as a trial to see whether it would work, and it worked quite nicely. We even used it on for prepping particular servers that we didn't originally have in the specification, and it worked flawlessly. But in general, no, it was a completely clean slate, a completely new deployment. All right, and one last question off the bat. So right now there are about 50 in production. Sorry, the question was how many hosts are we managing right now? There are about 50 in production. They're rolling about 5 new ones out every week. So it'll take March or probably a bit longer than that until we have the entire environment puppetized.
Is that branch servers and desktops included?
That's right. So the question was, is that branch servers and desktops included? The funny thing is that we did all the branch servers and they sort of slowly went out, once every 2 or 3 weeks. But we did the branch manager PCs and the desktops, and they were all desktop machines through Puppet. And we did that sort of as an afterthought, and we've actually deployed more of them than we have of the branch servers. So. All right, thank you very much.